thanks for being here, and also actually very exciting to follow up those past presentations and think about things in the other parts of the country, but also now wanting to really focus and a lot of the same themes that have already been brought up we can look at and think of in New York City. So I'm going to talk about our school transportation study. I've got no financial relationships to disclose, so I can kind of jump right into it. Our study looked at sixth grade students. My office, the District Public Health Office, is focused on addressing equity issues, and so working in low-income communities and trying to better understand the health disparity issues. And one of the areas that we're interested in is active transportation. So we wanted to understand more in terms of how kids are getting to and from school and levels of active transportation, walking, biking, and riding skateboards and scooters, and what are the factors that influence those things. So putting it in context, although the LA context is even more bleak than the context in New York City, we're looking at our overweight and obesity rates, and we're seeing that same gap between looking at low-income communities compared to higher-income communities. So where my study was focused on is these three low-income communities, East and Central Harlem, the South Bronx, North and Central Brooklyn, and comparing that to other areas in New York City, and you see, just like what LA was talking about, the trend for childhood obesity seems to be going down in the non-low-income communities, and doesn't seem to be going down, at least not as quickly, in the low-income communities. The other bit of context that I want to put out there is this image from the World Health Organization. I've always kind of been drawn to this. I think as public health people, we can see our role definitely in the top part of this triangle, the cigarette butt, the Big Mac, the sugary drink, and the pastry. But I think if we are really to develop comprehensive approaches to address chronic diseases, we've got to move a little bit outside of our comfort zone and be working with city planners, Department of Transportation, and obviously Department of Education to address issues around active transportation, physical activity, and physical inactivity. So I'm sorry, this is the last day of this conference. You've probably seen this slide or slides similar to this many, many times, but it is a good framework in terms to think about our work, and as we're moving further out there, trying to affect policy systems, environments, we've got to work on those outer layers. What was unique about our work is that we tried to put an evaluation measure, a research measure, at each part of the social ecological model. What I'm going to be presenting on here today is to give you a little flavor, a little teaser on each of those measures and what we're seeing in terms of results. So before kind of jumping into the study, I wanted to just talk a little bit about our sample, talk a little bit about some of the exclusion criteria. So as I mentioned previously, or on the slide, we are focused on sixth grade students. We're interested in sixth grade students because it's at that age that you're starting to get more independent. Also, a lot of active transportation programming is focused around that age. But we wanted to exclude schools that didn't have at least seventh graders. We didn't want the sixth graders to be the oldest kids in the school. Also, as I said, we're interested in the environment around the school, so we only sampled one school per building, so if there are multiple schools, which happens frequently in New York, multiple schools in the same building, we would only sample one. We also excluded schools that were already receiving intensive programming from the health department on active transportation issues. and we excluded parts of the neighborhood that had much lower walkability. We used the walk score to exclude parts of neighborhoods that had low walk scores because we wanted to have a more generalizable study, and we knew that certain areas are less walkable than others. Overall, New York City is a very walkable environment, so we're looking at very high walk scores. It was just a convenience sample. We essentially recruited the first 15 schools that we could out of an eligible 49, and we had a high completion rate of surveys and a sample of about 1,100 students. So to give, provide you a little bit more information, excuse me, a sample of 1,000 students, and to provide you a little bit more information about what that student sample looked like, about two-thirds were Latino, Hispanic, and 19% were Black, African American. So as we've seen from previous presentations, obviously distance to school matters a lot, so we wanted to get that out there right away. So this is distance to school by the number of blocks to school. And so for sixth graders in low-income communities in New York City, we found 42% living within 5 blocks, about 70% living within 15 blocks from school. In New York City, and this, so this is a self-report measure. New York City, a north-south block, you get 20 blocks in a mile. East-west blocks can be 8 blocks per mile. So it is a self-report measure, so there are some limitations in terms of like thinking about this, but in terms of having the sixth graders report, we found that that would be the best way for them to give us a good measure. So some people may look at this and say, wow, New York, you're doing great. You know, you're already looking at 60% of the kids in low-income communities walking to school, very low utilization of other methods of active transportation, about a quarter of the population using subways and city buses, a small percentage using yellow school buses, and 14% using cars. And this is the relationship that we expect to see. The planner from Massachusetts made wonderful points in terms of thinking about the factors around distance to school and how that changes transportation mode. And if we were to think about interventions, we really would probably focus on that distance, say, between 6 blocks to school and 15 blocks, or 6 blocks and 20 blocks, because those are really potentially the students where we could see where we could increase the levels of active transportation. Safety was something that was a strong theme in terms of what we heard from students. So less than half actually think that it's safe to walk in the neighborhood around the schools, and fewer than a third think that it's safe to bicycle in the neighborhood around the schools. Parental encouragement was something that that we saw was a factor. So that was, and that's encouraging. If the parents want you to walk, then you're more likely to walk, at least as a sixth grader. And we can see this relationship holding true even across distances with the distance between home and school. So that was the student survey. Now I want to kind of move out on the social ecological model. And another measure that we did was we held focus groups. Held 6 focus groups in the 3 neighborhoods. We had separate focus groups for students that got to school via active transportation and students that were not using active transportation. So these were focus groups with the parents. And the safety and expediency, those are the factors that parents said really influenced their decision about how kids got to school. And although parents recognize physical activity is a good thing, They get that, but they don't see that physical activity is a factor in terms of their transportation to school choices. So this is one parent. We have to make sure that the path they are taking is safe. We all know there is danger among kids themselves, among adults, and knowing there's nobody watching our kids from school to home, that they're on their own, that's not right. And we also heard from parents that they're doing many different things to try to keep their kids safe, and that they really wanted help. They wanted help to make sure that that travel from school, from home to school, was safe, regardless of which method that they traveled. Why do we give her a cell phone? She's not supposed to use it at school, but she calls us when she gets to school. If something happens, I'm going to know about it right away. And another parent, they have cops out here at night. They stand literally in front of my building. Why couldn't they have them out there during the time when kids are coming out of school? All right, so moving even another step out on that social ecological model, we conducted a principal survey. So we wanted to find out more about policies and programming at the school level, and also resources that may influence active transportation. So some of the things that we found, more than a quarter of principals reported that they do not have any crossing guards at any of the intersections around their school. None of the principals, none of the schools that we worked with, that we researched, reported having any written policies that encouraged active transportation. Only two of the 15 reported having any activity that encouraged walking or biking to school in the last year. And only two had bike racks or a safe place for bike, scooters, or skateboards to be on school property. In addition, moving even further out on that social ecological model, we conducted a built environment assessment, going out and looking at the streets, the perimeter around the school area, and the adjacent blocks. We did this in teams of two. Unfortunately, I have not yet analyzed this data, so can't even give you a teaser on this one. And then one thing that we did in addition to our study, and actually was the first step, was actually to conduct a policy scan. So we wanted to look at, we're interested in, you know, where the policy system environment focus should be or can be. We wanted to see what where the potential levers would be. So we looked at city, state, federal policies, other city agencies. We did some searches, and we grouped our findings in kind of two different buckets. One is safety, looking at policies that affect safety, because that was something that we expected and definitely something that we heard loud and clear, both on the student survey and then also on the focus groups. And encouragement, what are the factors that may encourage one form of transportation versus another? So before concluding, wanted to just put out there some of our limitations. So obviously we've actually seen some very different environments already that we've discussed. So there's a limitation around generalizability and how generalizable these findings are to other environments. And as I mentioned previously, it's all based on self-report, so we have limitations on that level as well. In terms of the built environment assessment and also the policy scan, kind of interesting to think in terms of, our study is only as good as what measures we had, and there may be measures that that we didn't capture. And then in terms of thinking about policies, we all know in reality that there is kind of the written policies, and then sometimes there are the way things are done. And sometimes those are congruent, and sometimes they're not. So we're limited, obviously, to just the written policies. So in terms of our findings, sixth grade students in low-income communities, we found that most live within a very walkable, a distance very suitable for active transportation. 60% walk, and few use other forms of active transportation. Many do not think that it's safe to walk or bike in the neighborhood around the school. Distance and parental encouragement are associated with active transportation. At the parent level, safety and expediency being real, the real drivers in terms of those transportation decisions, and parents really wanting help in terms of keeping their kids safe, and that may be a way for us to think about active transportation programming, is to really try to address some of those parental concerns. Looking at the principal survey, we found that most schools really are doing very little around encouraging active transportation. And we identified policies that we can potentially work on in the future to try to increase active transportation in the urban environment. And I wanted to thank my co-authors and the team of people that helped implement this study, and the support that we got at various different levels. And I've included my email address up there if you would like to follow up with any additional questions or comments. So thank you very much.
Just a really quick question. I know majority of the students live very close to the school, but when you guys did a survey, were they able to look at those students who don't live that close and what role public transportation, I mean affordability of public
So yeah, so we could stratify our findings and look at just that subsample that say are 21 blocks or further, and look at that relationship. You know, we've done that somewhat here in terms of so you can see that you know, as you get further and further away, this line, the active transportation line, goes down dramatically. And then you get the split in terms of those that are taking public transportation, subway, or city buses, versus those that are using their own car. Yes?
What tool did you use for the built environment assessment?
We created our own. And we struggled with that for a long time in terms of, like, we really wanted to use something that was already out there, and we borrowed elements. But the New York City environment is pretty different than how other tools have been created. And we've done this work. We've actually developed a tool so that I think of it as this continuum of research versus community engagement. And so we sometimes use a similar tool working with parents and teachers from a school and actually have them go out and do an assessment. And that really opens up their eyes. And so it had some measures from that type of work as well.